a rare Chase airline transfer bonus, fee-free 5X, and a trip report from a point-fueled European vacation on today's Mileonomics Squared podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sam Simon.
And I'm Robert Dwyer.
And this is the Mileonomics Square podcast, no annual fee edition. We're back.
If you're not subscribed to the full Mileonomics Squared podcast, you're missing out on a deeper dive into topics like the following. Sam, you want to take news item number one?
Absolutely. Chase, this is rare. I mean, we opened the show saying this is rare, but Chase has a 30% transfer bonus to British Airways for ultimate rewards. And this, I cannot remember there ever being a Chase transfer bonus. This is through June 16th of this year. And basically, you transfer your ultimate rewards. You won't see the bonus on the ultimate reward side, but it will come through when the transfer happens. So transfer 1,000 ultimate rewards, get 1,300 Avios. 10,000, 13,000 Avios. It's pretty straightforward. We've seen this kind of transfer bonus has happened with American Express for years. I love that it's happening with Chase finally. Robert, I have to know, what is your take on this?
British Airways Avios have always been a little challenging for me to use.
No.
From the East Coast. Really their value to me hinges on there being saver level AA availability domestically. And I have just never had good luck with that. And if I'm going to book domestic flights, I'm probably going to do it with bank points rather than Avios. But maybe your situation is different on the West Coast. I mean, they're great for flights
totally
to Hawaii.
Yeah.
You've got to be excited about this. I know you've cashed out ultimate rewards before. So are you going to do this speculatively or do you only if you have some? I mean, we have a couple months to think about it, but
yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah.
Are you going to do some transfers?
I'm looking at a trip to Hawaii. And if I do take that trip, I have enough in my British Airways account right now for three tickets. I would only need three. So would I speculatively reload the account at 30%? I think I would.
Wow.
And the reason that I would is I do cash out my ultimate rewards for the most part. I know I can use, let's call it 100,000 ultimate rewards or British Airways Avios for four tickets to Hawaii sometime in the next year or so. So would I do better than 30% transfer bonus? I don't think so. And I famously don't hold a Chase Sapphire Reserve. So I'm not getting over 1.25 uplift if I were to book a cash fare with those ultimate rewards. So I'm checking a lot of boxes off here. Unless there's a serious cash sale to Hawaii, I'm doing better with these Avios bookings, because I'm looking at 20,000 ultimate rewards round trip. If I can find saver level, now that's a big if, but you know, with flexibility that I have, and so many options for flights to so many different islands, I can't see it going wrong. Famous last words, right?
So, this is, AA domestic LA to Hawaiian Islands is your killer transfer, your redemption with these. And you pretty regularly find that availability, or is it close in, or what's the trend there?
It seems to come up in batches. And I mean, just it was fantastic for the holidays, for Christmas. It's been picked through pretty clean. It was great over the summer. It's been picked through pretty clean at this point. But then they do tend to release even, you know, more seats when they're there. I mean, you'll see 9 seats on a flight LA to Hawaii, when they're released. And I think that's just the maximum they're going to show you. So there's probably more than 9 award seats. Now, when you have to connect, I get what you're saying, Robert. From the East Coast, this is a completely different bonus. It's probably not worth it. But I can even use these to, especially I live in Los Angeles, I can use these to get to Dallas. I can use these to get to Seattle. I can use these to take pretty much any of those shorter hops around the country as well. So it's one of my favorite programs as well, because there's no cancellation fee other than the $5.60. So for family travel, I think it's a fantastic program too, because you can pull the plug on a flight and really don't have to feel like you're losing anything.
Staples is back with fee-free MasterCard gift cards this week. This runs April 21st to April 27th. It's a great opportunity. There doesn't seem to be enforcement of the one card per transaction policy that we saw the last time this ran about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Have you been able to buy some of these already? I haven't had a chance to get over to my local Staples store yet.
Yeah, I did. I made it out. And I know that we had talked on the paid show a few weeks ago that we worried when that memo didn't, or when that last sale happened and there was no limit put on the sale flyer, we worried, well, this could ruin a good store, because then a memo went out to managers that said, hey, you need to enforce the limit. I had a great experience today. I actually had a store that has never been good. So there was nothing out. There was no listing of the sale even being on, which is actually good. It's good news because it means stock won't get depleted as fast. It's good news because it means maybe certain cashiers won't know the sale is on. I would go certainly sooner than later this week. As the word gets out, it might tighten up. But everything was good today.
Good. Good. Yeah. So there's some card linked programs to consider working with this as well to make it even better. Dosh has 3% back at Staples, capped at $5 a day. So that can make this negative fee. And it occurred to me that the maybe a little bit more obscure Pace application, PAYCE, has a Staples $5 back deal as well. That one is kind of, I think, limited to one per month. I actually just logged back in to that program for the first time in a long time and saw that deal seemed to regenerate, that I did a deal at Staples and CVS last month at some point, and I see those were available to be linked again, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, and a couple of nice things you can stack on there. I mean, there's always an opportunity for interference between all those different programs, but a great deal in low margins and or low scale, and maybe some opportunity to scale it if you have a very friendly local Staples. So I like this deal. We talk a lot on the paid show about ways to liquidate these MasterCard gift cards at low fees as well. So check that out if you're stumped on easy ways to liquidate these MasterCard gift cards.
Yeah, there's also a Chase offer for some people at Staples. So there's Chase offer. There's an American Express offer that a lot of people linked for 10% back at Staples. It's just a great week to double up here, double dip. And I really, yeah, that liquidation that we've talked about on the paid show is fantastic too. So I think
quick question for you. Yep. Have you ever bought anything at Staples other than gift cards?
No, other than filler. Sometimes I'll put filler in there, but no, I really have not. No, it's really sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
How's that store exist? It's crazy.
Oh, boy.
You got to take this next one, Robert.
Well, there's been a meaningful labor strike here in the Boston area and other locations for Stop and Shop in the Northeast region. It was bad. I stopped by the store, to Stop and Shop, the first day of the strike, and there were people out there with picket signs swirling in the entrance. And I was like, I don't need to get involved in this at all. But it's nice to hear that came to an end, because that was significantly disturbing, not just their livelihoods, but our abilities to buy gift cards there. That I'm pleased to report that's over, because Stop and Shop is a very friendly retailer for buying Visa gift cards, MasterCard gift cards in store at grocery stores. So good to see that come and go. It happened to occur while I was out of the country for the most part, so that was an interesting coincidence. But yeah, they're back in business as of today. The whole time I hear the customer service desk was closed. And that's where you typically need to go to conduct transactions in any volume of MasterCard gift cards, Visa gift cards, money orders, that type of thing. So good to hear that they were able to patch that up back to business here, hopefully in the next few days at Stop and Shop.
Yeah, I never like to see a store that you like to buy at effectively not open for business.
Yeah, didn't see that one coming.
But you missed most of it, right?
Yeah, no, yeah. It started like a couple of days before I left town, and thankfully finished up yesterday, Easter Sunday. I don't think, you know, stores are instantly back to normal. I mean, they're probably more concerned about restocking the shelves with especially perishable items than, you know, selling us our precious MasterCard gift cards and such.
No, we don't need dairy. We need these, right? Yeah.
Priorities, people.
Well, let's get right into this main topic here, because I just teased it and you have been on a trip the last week and a half or so, I think, or week, I guess. Yeah. And there's a lot to unpack from a trip, not just your luggage. I'm talking about what exactly went into it, because we're not, I would say, traditional travelers in the sense of how we book our trips, how we experience our trips, what we do, where we stay. There's a lot that we will go over in this show today that I think a standard travel and tourism type person would just go, what? Why are we even talking about Ultimate Reward Booking? But there's a lot here that I think once we unpack it, it's going to illustrate how you approach this and really your style of travel. And I think that listeners can learn a lot from that. So, Robert, you want to talk about the trip first? How do you want to handle that?
Yeah, let me lay out the parameters for it. And then we can, I think, jump into each of these like components in it, hopefully from like an interesting point of view in terms of how we use points and miles for things. When do you pay cash? Is it good to take a daytime flight? How is it working through the Ultimate Rewards portal versus just paying cash directly with a tour provider? Things like that. So Sam, keep me honest here and making sure that everything we talk about can be generally applied to somebody who's taking any kind of trip and looking to fuel them with points and miles. So this trip was for my family of four. We got boys that are 14 and 11 years old right now. We were traveling over our April school break. So it's a little bit of a competitive time, I would say, to find award availability. We're flying out Saturday and back the next Saturday, and we were looking to go to Italy mostly. But we ended up going to London, spending a little time in London, Venice, Italy, and Rome. Nice. And so our routing was Boston to Heathrow. We stopped there for a couple days. And then we flew back from Rome to Heathrow to Boston. And so I needed to piece together some additional transportation between those things. But that was the basics of the major flights that I booked. And I wrote a blog post about how I pieced that together using American Express membership rewards and Delta SkyMiles to fly on a combination of Virgin Atlantic upper class both ways to Heathrow, and then a leg on Alitalia in economy. So that ended up costing 150,000 SkyMiles per person, plus $100 in taxes and fees for that major portion of the routing. And I went over that a lot in a blog post already, so I don't want to cover that too much. But I guess the essence of it was that Delta miles were better to use for Virgin Atlantic flights than Virgin Atlantic points would have been, because the fuel surcharge just get out of hand when you fly on Virgin Atlantic metal with Virgin Atlantic miles. And another thing to avoid is going through Heathrow as a starting point to a vacation. So like a lot of times I'll book a one-way using one currency over there and then one-way back using another currency. And doing that out of Heathrow, or even having Heathrow be the start point of the return as part of a round trip, is really bad for fuel surcharges. So I guess the real key there was starting the return in Rome and then connecting through Heathrow. I mean, as miserable as the duration of that experience can be, connecting through Heathrow, it can save you a lot on fuel surcharges if you start somewhere else. Oh, yeah, it's brutal. Absolutely. Three hours to kind of get through.
Sorry. Yeah, especially a family of four, because you're looking at multiple hundreds of dollars per person times four. Yeah, so, absolutely. You know, you could put together a portion of your trip with that money instead.
Yeah, so I was pleased to keep the total taxes and fees down to 100 a person.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a lot of miles, right? That was, you know, looking back, I was like, where did I come up with all those miles? It's 600,000 Amex membership rewards / Delta SkyMiles, the Delta being a one-to-one transfer partner of Amex membership rewards. But that's a lot, right? That's, you know.
Were these miles you transferred?
A combination, I would say. Uh-huh. I think I ended up booking a couple of them out of my my Delta account and a couple out of my wife's, and that was probably because of Amex Delta credit card sign-up bonuses each of our accounts, plus then topping off with Amex membership rewards. I guess there was a little bit of a fee to do that transfer for the portion that was transferred from membership rewards. I don't know. It's like a fraction of a penny a piece. It's not completely free, but. All right. So one thing that was unique about the flights that I actually liked was the timing of them. Virgin Atlantic has a rare daytime flight getting over from Boston to Heathrow. So we started off the journey at 8 a.m. On the way over there. And then we actually came back on effectively that same flight at 8 p.m. We returned on a night flight. So it's kind of the opposite of where we're used to flying over there at night and returning during the day, it was kind of the opposite. I actually slept on the way back, and it was a daytime flight for the way over. So that was interesting.
We started the show, we were talking about the use of British Airways on the East Coast versus the West Coast. This is interesting to me because daytime flights to Europe on the West Coast are some of the worst for jet lag for me on the East Coast there. That's like a 7-hour flight and it's a daytime flight. Did that help, you think, with jet lag, or was that worse?
Yeah, it hasn't been that bad. I think it's been, you know, I'm maybe getting a little bit tired here towards the, you know, the end of the day, but on the way over there, it was strange, right? Because you get on the airplane, like, oh, here's some breakfast, and then a couple hours go by, and then here comes, you know, the kind of typical 3 or 4 course, you know, dinner kind of thing with, you know, cheese and dessert and port wine and all this stuff. So by the time we landed, I couldn't believe we were coming in for landing. It was like that went by so quickly. And we, you know, landed at Heathrow, had to clear passport control and customs there. And we got to the hotel and the sun had gone down and it was time for bed. And I was able to go to sleep. You know, it was like the shortest day of my life, but it's just a grind flying on an airplane, going through Heathrow and all that kind of stuff. Our kids were a little rambunctious. You know, their clocks weren't ready to go to bed yet, but it worked out pretty well on that end. And in terms of on the vacation during, you know, the day, it worked out pretty well in terms of quickly getting acclimated to the time change.
I'm jealous.
And then, I mean, it's about 6 hours on the way over and it's about 7 on the way back.
Okay.
And last night, you know, we were, you know, tired early. We went to bed a little bit early and everybody woke up a little bit early, but that, you know, beats the alternative to me of just being like totally having a hard time getting out of bed in the morning. So it's pretty good.
How was the flight? How's Virgin upper class? I know they're redoing it, but this obviously is the standard product they still have, right?
Yeah, it was good. You know, good to very good. I'd say the return was quite a bit nicer than the outbound. First, the outbound flight was 100% full.
Ooh.
The return flight was lightly loaded. I mean, there was, I think, probably 8 people out of 31 seats on the return flight. But on the way out, it's 100% full. And that made a big difference in terms of the quality of service and the spaciousness of the cabin. I mean, it's those seats, when I looked at them online before, having never flown Virgin upper class, they looked like you're just packed in there like sardines in a row, right? It's kind of awkward. You're facing the person on the aisle across from you, and it's there's not a lot of privacy, right? And the seats are pretty tight. So I think it is due for a refresh. The food and beverage was very good. All things considered, I think I'd probably prefer a lot of other business class products over this one. You know, Lufthansa, I think, is better. Swiss is better. Even I'd probably take Delta One over this. So,
but for a day flight, it doesn't really, I mean, you're not even using the bed, right?
Yeah, I guess my takeaway in that was I would probably prefer to fly just, you know, from a value perspective. I'll look harder next time to see whether I can find economy or premium economy seats during the day, because I think I could totally tolerate that.
That's huge. This is like, this is mind blowing here. Robert Dwyer economy.
Yeah, no,
I'm with you. I mean, I'm with you there. I'm surprised to hear you say it, but especially on the way there, you're excited. You're excited for the trip. Just to jump back to the seat is binary, right? You're either sitting or sleeping. There's no.
It is that. That's a really good point. There's an ability to make the seat recline a little bit, but you cannot just hit the button and make it go into a lie flat position the way most lie flats that I've seen work. You have to get out of the seat and the back of the seat flips down, and then you apply bedding to it and then you sleep. So that you typically need to like elect, okay, now it's sleepy time, right? And so that was not so great to me, right? Like I was maybe wanted to lay back and just watch a TV show, but I wasn't ready to fully commit to the sleeping process.
Or just lounge like in a 3-quarter position or something like that. Interesting, I mean, when you look at what you paid for it in miles that you had to transit Heathrow, if there was a better option available, let's say Swiss with Aeroplan miles or Lufthansa with United miles, would you have taken that instead? Was this booked just because it was the only option you could find, like you said, during a busy April holiday week?
Yeah, it was the only thing I could find when I was in the market for this.
Sure.
I knew that I generally wanted to go to Italy. And the only way to go from Boston to Italy direct is Alitalia. And they have downright wonky, you know, practices for releasing availability. Yeah. I hardly ever see them available at Saver level for Delta bookings. And I think there's some way to do that with transfer of membership rewards to Alitalia. But I don't think they release more than two seats at a time in business class. And so that's just, it's always been challenging. We like to go to Italy a lot, and we've never flown the Alitalia direct flight. So yeah, I think I would prefer, like on the way home, I did a search the day of to see whether space opened up on that Alitalia flight, and it didn't. And I happened to see that there were four seats on Lufthansa first on the way back through Frankfurt. And yeah, I would probably do that over this because, you know, we had no reason to go through Heathrow the second time. Not that Frankfurt's an easy airport to connect through either, but I do like other options. But at the same time, $75,000 per person one way isn't terrible. I mean, I was looking at Delta's, you know, on the return flight, seeing an empty cabin. I was like, man, there's got to be a bunch of seats open for redemption, right? So I'm thinking there's a great opportunity here, maybe just if you want to go to London to take advantage of this empty cabins. I think it's a relatively new route for them, or a new time of day for them to be running two flights to Boston each day. And I was looking using Delta miles. I think the best I saw was 86,000 Delta miles per person one way for this redemption now. So it's gone up even from 75 to 86. And when I looked to book it with Virgin Atlantic, it was weird. It said this route isn't available for miles redemptions. I was like, what? So I don't know. I have to look in that. Not that I would do that anyways, though, right? I mean,
you wouldn't want to start in London either.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, you got to get out of there and then come back. So it's an interesting puzzle. I know we're going to go into this more on the paid show. The idea, just take anything you can take to get to Europe.
Yeah,
yeah. But I'm not a fan of that either. I think you illustrate some of the issues with that.
Actually, let's pause and talk about the lodging and the tours for the whole thing. So
sure, let's go ahead and move on to that. Yeah.
So the big thing for me, I've been listening to this Milenomics, mantra of be your own elite, right? And so I really put it to the test on this trip. I stayed in absolutely no loyalty hotels, right?
There you go. All right.
Yeah. Listening. I said, you know, I'm just going to go all in. I'm going to stay in all boutique hotels, no loyalty hotels. I'm just going to use Ultimate Rewards to book these, or just book them directly with cash. And I started poking around the Chase portal, you know, in earnest for the first time since they started working with Expedia. And I have to say, really good results there. So all of the hotels that I booked and all of the tours that I booked, three hotels and four tours, were booked 100% through the Chase Expedia portal with 1.5 cents per point of uplift with the Chase Sapphire Reserve. I really liked it. It was super easy to book all of them, especially the tours. I'm terrible at booking tours when I get somewhere. And all the inventory that they have there is the Expedia inventory. And from what I saw, the prices of the hotels and the tours were as good or better as what I would see in booking them directly through the tour provider. And I was able to book it, with Ultimate Rewards with Uplift. So a pretty good story there. And so let's go through those. So starting in London, I stayed at the Rosewood Hotel, and that was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Gorgeous, gorgeous hotel with fantastic service. One thing I like about booking through the Chase portal is, you know, usually my usual pattern is, okay, let's check loyalty hotel. What does the Hilton have in London? What does the Hyatt have in London? What does Marriott have in London? So then I have to find room places that could accommodate four people in a room if I want to get the family into one room without having to pay for two rooms. And then I have to see, you know, whether they charge more points or cash than the standard room for a room that takes four people. You know, some chains do that. But with this approach, I just went to Chase and I typed in, I got four people and show me the rooms. And, you know, a friend actually recommended the Rosewood. I'm glad she did, because it's a terrific hotel. And they have a double family room, they call it, that has two double beds. So that worked out for us well there. Just the whole property is gorgeous and really well positioned just a little bit north of Covent Garden. And but the food and beverage there was spectacular. There's this bar there that is just so well done. I think it's called Scarfs. It's named after a cartoonist, and I think an illustrator. And so there's all these illustrations on the wall from this guy, but the ambiance in the place was just so perfect. Like low lights, candles, fireplace, guy playing an acoustic guitar at the perfect volume, not out of, you know, it's adding ambiance to the room. It's like, why is it so hard to get live musicians to be at appropriate volume in a venue like a bar? But you, like, you walk into the bar and there's like somebody greets you and says, oh, would you like to sit at the bar? Or would you like to sit over here? Like in an American bar, it seems like you've got to fight for your space at the bar, and then you have to angle for drinks, so then you have to kind of set yourself up. This place was so precisely done. I mean, I'm not a big martini guy, but they made me a gin martini there. I was looking for something a little bit contemporary, but traditional and a little bit of fruit forward. And the guy made this perfect gin martini there. And just the service was so spot on. I mean, these guys were like precisely laboring over the cocktails they were crafting, like two guys working on each individual drink, like, you know, infused things on top and certain types of ice. And just, they were not there to chat with customers. They were there to create perfect cocktails. It was an amazing bar, and the restaurant was fantastic for breakfast as well, but not a free breakfast. I paid for the breakfast because I was not at a loyalty hotel and it had no status. We splurged one morning for breakfast, and then the next day we did not have time for breakfast. So that's happened to me sometimes too, where you stay at a loyalty hotel so you can get the free breakfast, and then you don't have time, you know, 2/3 of the days to get the free breakfast. Yep. So you're like, oh, we had free breakfast one morning out of three, but that didn't do me as much good as I thought it would.
Well, I give you an A for effort on this one. I like what you're talking about here. And I, you know, we've beat up the Chase Ultimate Reward portal, especially the new portal. We beat them up pretty hard. But to actually see some good use out of it, I think that's good. I mean, we'll call it when we see it good, we'll call it good. And when we see it bad, we'll call it bad. So, you know, hotels, tours, sounds great. It's just those home share properties or whatever it is.
You'll never see a vacation property. Never. No matter how hard you work.
No. So,
so in London, we did a photography tour through Chase, and that was good. Good to very good, I would say. You know, whether tour is good or not is a little bit, you know, everybody has different taste in what they might do. My son has interest in photography. We thought it'd be something good to do different. But what I liked about it that's maybe generally applicable here is that the Chase Expedia portal is very transparent in terms of which tour you're booking. They list the tour provider very clearly in their listings. So we saw that this company was called Hairy Goat Tours for whatever it's worth. And so I could go to their website and see what they were all about. And I could look at TripAdvisor reviews of Hairy Goat Tours and see they had really good reviews. Right. And we got what we paid for there. And we absolutely worked with the tour provider that we were expecting. It was a really good tour, but it was just kind of like an off the beaten trail thing of London. It wasn't like they were teaching you how to take better pictures of Big Ben and Parliament. It was like, let's go to this one cool little thing and let's work on some techniques. And it's cool because they helped me use my phone to take better pictures. And my son had a DSLR and she helped him take better pictures. So that was cool. But just more notably, I really liked the way the Chase portal packaged these and made it enabled me to do meaningful research, right? Like if I go look at Viator and see the reviews that their tours are getting, I'm a little suspicious, right? Because I'm like, well, they can just filter out any negative reviews they want and just make things look all, you know, rosy and sunshiny, right? But in this case, I appreciate that transparency, and the pricing was good. The pricing for all the tours was as good or better than what the tour provider showed. And I think I showed you a screenshot of this. When I was there, I was poking around at maybe some ground transfer options. There's this thing pops up and says, hey, you booked your hotel through Chase, so any activities you book or some activities that you book are going to be 18% less or something like that. And so I don't know if that's what was causing me to see better prices than what I was seeing when I would go to the tour provider directly, but it doesn't hurt. So, I mean, I think it's a really smart play on their part. Like, hey, you're here, you booked through us, let's give you a better deal on the tours. So check that out if you ever have a hotel booked, or, I mean, maybe strategically you could book a dummy hotel and then book the tour and then cancel the hotel if they truly are discounting the tours. Yeah, because of that. But I didn't do enough research to see whether that was reliably and usefully applying to a lot of things, because I didn't see it applying to ground transfer options, but I think I was looking too close, like the day before I was returning back to the airport or something like that. So I'll have to do some more research on that.
So you've got to get over to Italy now. You're in London. What'd you do?
Yeah, so we flew over from the London City Airport to Venice on British Airways and Economy. It's a 2-hour flight and no problem. I booked it with Wells Fargo GoFar Rewards. It was a cheap flight, like $100 or something like that. But the big problem there was the passport control in Venice. I mean, I always want to get to the airport in Europe a little bit earlier because I don't know how much rigmarole there is going to be getting, you know, onto the plane. And then, you know, the flight was on time in only 2 hours, but I mean, an hour and a half to get through passport control. I think it was particularly bad because they had some construction going on at the Venice airport. And if you've got kids under 14, you have to go into the line. So if you have, you know, most passports with kids that are people that are 14 or older, you can go through a more automated line, and that line went quite a bit quicker. But if you have an obscure passport, or if you have any kids with you, you've got to go through the manually processed line. And they had like two people there for our flight, so plus like an Emirates flight just came in. And they didn't care. No, they couldn't care less. No. People were cutting in line.
Yes, I was just going to say, I bet you everybody was doing whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. No, seriously, the guy in front of me, four guys cut in front of him, kind of very obviously. He says, get out of here. You can't do that. And so the guy tells one of these kind of people who are shepherding the whole thing, looking over the whole thing. And she's like,
it's so Italy.
Nothing.
That's so annoying.
Yeah, it was. So anyways, one of the things with Venice is getting from the airport over to the island, right? So kind of made a game out of this with the kids, right? Trying to figure out all the complexities of getting to this, you know, magical place where the streets are made of water. We booked at the spot. It's called the Ali Laguna. It's $15 or 15 euros per person for a shared water taxi ride, which drops you off somewhat near your central Venice hotel. That worked out fine. It was actually pretty good. There's all kinds of options in the Chase Ultimate Rewards portal for booking all the transfers there. But I read them and they got pretty bad reviews for what their prices were. You know, it's like if you look for transfers in Venice, it's like, you know, private, semi-private, shared, ground and boat and taxi. Oh, wow. You know, it's just like, oh my gosh, what am I even buying here? Right. So I was just like, I'll figure it out when I get there. And it turned out to be totally fine. I mean, it stops at a bunch of places on the Grand Canal before reaching the closest stop before your hotel. But you know, when you're cruising down the Grand Canal, it's a fun thing in itself. So it's a pretty cool experience.
Worst places to be. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So where'd you stay there? Also not a chain hotel, right?
Absolutely not. So we stayed at the Hotel Flora, it's called. And this felt like a very Rick Steves kind of place, I'd say. And, you know, he recommends on his show for the most part, you know, stay someplace that's affordable and simple and just what you need location-wise. And we did that. It was right in the middle of Venice. It was probably a 5-minute walk from halfway between St. Mark's Square and the Rialto Bridge. And I have to say, staying in central Venice overnight is really, really cool. The only time I'd been there before Venice was on our honeymoon cruise. We stopped there overnight. I thought it was a really beautiful city. So this is our first time back with the kids. But, you know, when you mention to somebody you went to Venice, they have really very, I've never heard anyone say, yeah, I thought Venice was nice. It's okay. People either hate it or they loved it, right? I mean, it's a very
polarizing,
divisive place. I think one way to have a terrible time in Venice is to do a day trip there from the mainland, right? Because you get all of the hassle. You get the terrible transportation challenges. You get the day crowds from all the other people doing the same thing that you were doing. And it's just a recipe for misery. So we were there 2 nights, which I say was good, and just had a fabulous time. The Hotel Flora was very nice. It had we booked a family room there, and we got a family room, had a king bed and two twin beds, which is really nice because my 11-year-old got sick a couple days into the trip, and to have those guys in separate beds during the night was really clutch because for sleeping purposes and things like that. But they had a daily complimentary breakfast buffet, which was very good, and more than anything, just a really nice location that totally met our needs. I mean, it's amazing how quiet that island gets at night. I mean, we were in the back of this hotel without any cars or anything. I mean, I felt like we were in Tuscany, in the country, with absolute silence around us. It was very, very cool place to be overnight. I'd stay there again. It wasn't super luxurious. I think it was about $360 a night for the family room, you know, which is more than like a standard room. There was like $200 or something like that, but it was plenty of space for us. And that was all we needed. In Venice, we did a market tour and kind of a food and snack tour. This one was good. It, this is where we get into the description of something on the Chase portal and understanding whether you're getting what you paid for. So it said that included a market tour, a tour of like off the beaten trail places where people get snacks. So they have these places called Bacaros. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. So, and you have these snacks called Chiquetis. And this, the woman did a really good job of taking us around, telling us a little bit about the history, and having the snacks and drinks. It was great. It was a good tour. But and lunch at the end. But then it said it included a gondola ride.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is great. We're gonna have everything we need to do in Venice all as one package, right? But the gondola ride wasn't really the 30 or 40 minute experience that you might get or expect to see people riding around. You know, it was called a traghetto, a transit across the Grand Canal where there's no bridge that's convenient. So it was literally like 3 minutes of it, and you're like jammed in there with like eight other people on the boat. It was more like a bridge alternative, yeah. Right? But yeah, and she mentions that right off the top. I'm like, man, I gotta go back and look at the description because I thought we were getting a gondola ride out of this. And I would have maybe like been a little bit more upset about it, but I don't think anybody in the family liked the gondola ride at all. So we're kind of actually pleased that it was so short because it's just unstable and you're sitting at it wasn't that great. So
that's funny.
I don't know. We kind of checked the box of having done the gondola ride. Yeah. Like, please, I don't want any more gondola ride. That's enough.
Well, you win some, you lose some, but I think that it's important to take those tours. I know that if you stayed at a large enough chain hotel, there's some kind of magnetism keeping you from leaving. And that's another reason I like those smaller boutique hotels. You really want to just go and do stuff. And what does the inside of a hotel in Italy look any different than inside of a hotel in New York City or inside of a hotel in London? It's for the most part, the same experience. But when you get out of there and you go and see the city that you're in, especially when you're in the area that, like you said, most people take a day trip there, you're actually staying there. You get a real view of it that most people don't. So I love that you just kept doing this, kept going on tours, just kept, and it seems like it paid off.
Well, yeah, I think one of the challenging things in Venice is, you know, we all thirst for the off the beaten trail hidden gem or something like that. But come on, really, is there any off the beaten trail hidden gem in Venice? Like, I don't know. Maybe if you went like to the far flung outskirts where people actually live, if there is such a place. I mean, like, I didn't understand, like, there's like a marketplace there, right? And they're selling like, you know, fish or whatever. Like, who everyone here is a tourist. Who's cooking fish in their hotel room? I mean, I guess there's enough of it to keep it going with locals that might actually live there and want. But it just seemed like the whole thing is just a little bit of a theme park. And that, I think it's why people can give it a, you know, negative marks. But I don't know, if you just go, you know, suspend your disbelief and just go and have a good time, it's good. A couple of restaurant recommendations there. One is this place called Rosa Rosa in Venice. And we didn't know until after we left, but it was a place that Johnny Depp used to go to a lot when he was filming The Tourist, or the people who own the place would have you believe. He signed the ceiling in this place, and there's pictures of him there. I practically wonder whether he's a part owner in it at this point. But that's a good story. And they had calzones that are as big as footballs. Oh, my goodness. It was a massive, massive calzone and a pretty good deal. So that was fun. One of the most memorable things we did, though, was after dinner, we went over, and the streets are just completely empty, right? And we went over to the Aman Hotel, which is probably like a 10-minute walk from where we were staying across the Rialto Bridge. And we wanted to get our way in there just to have some drinks and check the property out. You know, these Aman hotels are so distinct everywhere. They're, you know, it was a old Venice kind of palace that the family evidently still lives there, like on the fourth or fifth floor. But the rest of the building is just 24 rooms, and they said they put $34 million into renovating it. And we're like, oh, let's go check this out. And so we get over there, and I'm looking on Google Maps. I'm like, yeah, it's right here, but I don't see a way in. Like, run the front, run the back, run the side. I'm like, no signs. Right? I'm like, can you get here? No signs, right? And like, can you only get here from the water? Maybe you take a water taxi over, right? But we find this little call box in the back, and there was a sign there, but it wasn't lit up, and it was dark at night. So it was like a little brown, like, you know, 6-inch by 6-inch thing that said, you know, Aman Hotels or whatever. So we didn't see any way to get in there, right? So we just kind of buzzed in, like hit them thing, like to talk to a person, and it shines a light on you, and they let us in there, right? I mean, it felt like, what's that movie with Tom Cruise? Oh, Eyes Wide Shut. It felt like that. Like, we're walking down this path. I'm like, oh my God, what's going to happen here? Right? So we got in there, and we said, hey, we'd like to maybe just have a drink at the bar. And they said, yeah, go ahead and go on upstairs. And this is like there's two people at the whole bar in this place. And this place is gorgeous, just absolutely gorgeous. And just so appropriate for what you would imagine like the Doge of Venice would be living in if he lived there, right? And so we just sat down and had a couple cocktails. Everything was super expensive, but relative to, I mean, how expensive could things be? I think like a cappuccino was $10 and or 10 euros and maybe wine, glasses of wine for like 22 a glass or something like that. Really expensive, but a really good experience. So, and we
Come on, but that experience you're going to keep forever. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Right? So, and so this woman comes over from another table. She had just finished dinner there. They weren't staying there either. And they had dinner overlooking the Grand Canal. Just, they said it was fantastic, fantastic service. And sure, pricey, but just really great for what you got for such a kind of private experience. And she was saying that, she says, yeah, can you believe this room we're sitting in is where George Clooney got married? I was like, really? This is the place? Sure enough. And so you pull out the phone. And it's like there's pictures of him and Amal, you know, getting married there in the exact room where we were sitting. It's just a gorgeous place. And I think a really, I don't know, low cost way of checking out, you know, I think the hotel, I priced it out before we went there. I think it was over $2,000 a night for a room that didn't even fit us. So I would have needed to book two of them. So it's completely off the charts and shows up nowhere in the
You're not staying there with kids. No way. No
oh, you're
way,
right. Robert. It absolutely would have been a total waste. It would have been a total waste. But a nice way to have taste.
But you can come back someday. Yeah.
Well, if they ever get in the Chase Ultimate Rewards portal, maybe.
Ooh, that's going to be a tough sell, I think.
I've never seen any of their hotels in there. I booked the one in Phuket with through the city concierge. That was the best I was able to pull off. Right. And that was significantly cheaper than this one was just because August is off season. But
Thailand, yeah, too.
Yeah, true. Very nice. Very nice chain. I'm looking forward to getting to know them a little better. So Venice to Rome. Yeah. So we were just in Venice for a couple nights. And to get from Venice to Rome, we took the water taxi over there. There's a water bus. I was texting you pictures and such of that thing. This bus is looks like a total junk boat with a bunch of people crammed onto it. It was it was not pleasant, but it was so crowded that they didn't even come around to like take fares or anything. And I didn't feel like volunteering to give this guy money who kind of like had, you know, he was like practically operating the loading and unloading of the ship. He wasn't there to take money. So we got a free ride back to the train station. And the train was really, really nice. We took a train, the Freccia Rossa, which goes up to 190 miles an hour. And we booked four seats in the executive car, which holds just eight people. So it was just the four of us plus one other person for just a small portion of the entire ride. Included lounge access before departure, three-course meal, great selection of Italian wine and beer on board, and it was just $137 per person. And I paid for it with the U.S. Bank Altitude card points through that, super easy redemption. It was so much better than flying inter-Europe. I mean, you just get on the train, fantastic, you land right in the middle of Rome. I'm really trying to be done with taking short haul cheap flights in Europe because they're just so time consuming and draining. The train, absolutely, I think it's the way to go. This was the nicest train I'd ever been on, and I mean to me, cheaper than taking the Amtrak down to New York from Boston, even in you know economy class. They really do trains right over there in Italy. I don't know. Have you taken a lot of trains around Europe other than Italy? I don't have a lot of experience with them. Maybe I did the TGV in France, but.
I've done the TGV in France as well. You know, it's funny that you're saying $137.50 per person. I can hear the Italian version of this podcast going, who would ever pay $137.50 when you could, the other seats are just as good. Get you
the only
one
time.
Yeah, I know. I can hear it because it's like, I'm thinking in my head, like no Italian's going to do that because it just doesn't make sense that they're going to spend, they don't even need a seat. They're going to go 4 hours. I could stand up, you know? It's the same train, same 4 hours, you know, but I would do it. I've shared with you that my big issue with trains is the luggage with kids, with little ones. I always have that. I really am worried that I'm going to get stuck on the train with trying to get all the luggage off and the doors are going to close on me and just go, you know? And so
I think that's a totally irrational fear.
It's been close because I've got car seat, stroller, bag, backpack, you know, and my wife's in charge of making sure the kids get off the train. And sometimes, you know, this is why I would book this cabin, because sometimes if you're not in this cabin, then you've got to go another car to find room for the rest of your stuff. So, you know, it's like, having all your stuff in with you, that alone's worth $137.50 to me.
That's, you know, we did the TGV, and I remember, I think I booked business class there, and I don't know what to expect.
I did that too, right? But like,
it was crowded. Like we didn't sit together. It wasn't assigned seats. We had to put the luggage down at the end of the thing. And yeah, you know, you're right. This was the German ICE was nice too. We had like a table for four. We put our luggage right above us. It wasn't very crowded. Yeah. But this, you're right, was quite a bit more dignified. I thought they said that there was some amount of luggage handling that occurred with this, but nobody seemed to be volunteering that to us.
You know, I took a slower Italian train in Switzerland, and they had some luggage service there. It was nice. Mm-hmm. They made sure when I got off, they made sure they got all my stuff for me.
That's nice.
Yeah, but the luggage is a very significant source of some aggravation for me on these trains. So I'm taking notes here, Robert, for my next trip.
Well, you know, it's amazing how I have these blind spots, right? It's all about me, right? This is the thing I did. I have no idea what somebody else might object to. Like, if you look at taking toddlers to Venice, I think that'd be a total disaster. The kids are going to want to run in the lagoons. You can't get the strollers up over the bridges all over the place. I mean, it looks like a total mess, but I was just like, oh, this is great. I mean, and our kids are like at the age where you can give them a map and say, hey, find your way back to the hotel. We'll be back here watching you, right? And
yeah, they're not going anywhere.
They can't get off the island. They're not going to get lost. It was fantastic, right? But with a certain age group, it'd be a total like stress pot.
I'm years from being Venice proof, I guess you could say. So, you know what? I'm looking at the time here, and for the first time ever, we're out of time on the show, actually. It looks like this is going to be our first two-part show ever in the history of the Milenomics Square podcast. And that just means listeners are going to have to tune in next week to hear the rest of the trip, what happened in Rome, and how you got home. Robert, you mind closing us out today?
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us this week. For a more in-depth discussion about points and miles, visit us at patreon.com/milenomics. There you'll get a special link to additional content right in your mobile podcast app or on your computer, where we speak more freely about topics like these.
And as always, you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at Milenomics, and Robert is at Robert Dwyer. We'd love to hear from you. And until then, we'll see you on the site.